The very first dream I ever remember having was to write a book. And in some ways, this came true at the age of 5 in kindergarten when I wrote an 8-page nonfiction book about ants. But in the ways that really count, it came true this year. My first book was published in June, a book of poetry about faith and connection called Love Like Thunder. In the months that followed publication, my friends often introduced me or referred to me as a writer. I could acknowledge that I was technically a published author, but being called a writer made me uneasy at best. After all, a writer writes, right? Since turning in my final edits, I had hardly written a word. The most I managed was a few half-formed lines of poetry scribbled on a post-it note at work that I promptly stuck in the pocket of my jeans and forgot about until I was doing laundry. I was frustrated and embarrassed, sure that calling myself a writer was misleading, struggling to grasp why I had stopped writing. The truth was, I just couldn't. I had written almost all the content for Love Like Thunder in a matter of months, squeezing poetry from my heart and my guts like water from a sponge until nothing else would come, then twisting and wringing myself out just a little bit more. I was bone dry, and fighting it was doing no good. So I sat down on the bare soil and I let go. I've let my creative fields lie fallow, unplanted and unharvested for 9 months now. It hasn't been easy. Outpacing even my drive to create is the irrational gut feeling that everything important I will ever do has to start now in my 20s. But all that internal turmoil didn't change the fact that I simply had nothing left to draw from, no untapped emotions or unexplored experiences. So my pages stayed blank. Eventually, I was able to make a little art, short character studies scribbled in a notebook and collages glued together on a whim, much like the weeds and grasses that grow naturally when a field is left untouched. And now, as we swing through the darkest part of winter and back up into the light, I can feel the time to plant coming again. In all these months that my pen has been quiet, I've been listening, waiting, absorbing. The nutrients that enrich my soil, noticings about the world, connections with other people, moments of profound emotion have been replenished. I'm looking back at all the versions of myself who have looked on the empty fields in despair, and I want to take them by the shoulders and say, "Just you wait, darlings. I'm planting sunflowers."
This is a reading from the book Sabbath by Wayne Muller. Sabbath is more than the absence of work. It is not just a day off when we catch up on television or errands. It is the presence of something that arises when we consecrate a period of time to listen to what is most deeply beautiful, nourishing, or true. It is a time consecrated with our attention, our mindfulness, honoring those quiet forces of grace or spirit that sustain and heal us. Sabbath does not require us to leave home, change jobs, go on retreat, or leave the world of ordinary life. We do not have to change clothes or purchase any expensive spiritual equipment. We need only to remember. Sabbath time is not spiritually superior to our work. The practice is rather to find that balance point at which, having rested, we do our work with greater ease and joy and bring healing and delight to our endeavors. Even if we were to leave work behind and seek the comfort and security of a monastery, we would be handed a broom and told to sweep the floors. Even in monasteries, we cook and clean, build and repair, garden and sweep. But there is a time to sweep and a time to put down the broom and rest.
So when Roger and I first floated the idea of my taking a sabbatical for a few months, I had mixed feelings. One feeling is that I would miss you, and I would miss all the things that would be happening while I was gone. And the other feeling was the delight in imagining all the things that I could do with 3 months. So, of course, once we announced my sabbatical, many of you came up to me and asked me, what was I going to do on my sabbatical? Oh, I was so full of ideas. I'm going to Thailand. I'm going to work on a book project. I'm going to re-landscape my backyard. And then slowly, as the time of the sabbatical came closer, one by one, those plans started to fall away. I have a family. One of my dogs is ill, and it's not fair for me to leave my spouse alone. He needs a lot of care, so no international travel for me. And I realized that I didn't want that. I didn't want to be gone so far away. I didn't want to have replaced the busyness of my work here with another kind of busyness. It was starting to feel like the same, only different. And so it fell away. And I started to think of my time away in the winter as a hibernation, serious rest and restoration. You know, bears and other critters that hibernate through the winter, one of the things that they do is they start first by eating as much as possible to store up reserves for the winter. And I'm already ahead of the game on that. I want to thank all of you for the cookies, candy, and fudge. This was handed to me this morning. This is a little care package for me because you won't be feeding me while I'm on sabbatical. I may not sleep the whole 3 months, but I'm keeping my options open. So really, what will I do? In the reading that Roger shared, the author says that sabbatical, is a time to listen to what is most deeply beautiful, most nourishing or true, that we need only to remember. So in essence, with that as my guide, I plan to do nothing, an intentional nothing. Winter is the perfect time for a sabbatical. It's a fallow time when the fields rest and restore themselves for the next year's crop. I kind of like the idea of that model. It's a time of darkness going inward. Animals who are in hibernation, their heartbeat slows way down. And I am called to slow way down as well. Less computer, less being plugged in, less. I am a very fortunate person to be able to take 3 months away and to be supported by you in doing that. Part of the deal with ministers is that we work very, very hard, and then when we need it, when we feel depleted, we have a chance to replenish our batteries and our spirits. And that's what I intend to do. Now, not everyone can take a sabbatical. I totally understand that. I worked for 25 years in higher education. Faculty were getting sabbaticals, and I was not getting one. But you can take a Sabbath, a day or an evening, a little bit of time, as Muller says, consecrated with our attention, our mindfulness, honoring the quiet forces of grace or spirit that sustain and heal us. Darkness and stillness can be challenging. Putting aside what we do can be challenging. And by the looks of seeing everybody in the world going like this all the time, it's quite countercultural to slow down, take your time, do less. I offer you a poem that is a challenge that comes to us from another time.
This is a poem by Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks. Be helpless, dumbfounded, unable to say yes or no. Then a stretcher will come from grace to gather us up. We are too dull-eyed to see that beauty. If we say we can, we're lying. If we say no, we don't see it. That no will behead us and shut tight our window onto spirit. So let us rather not be sure of anything. besides ourselves, and only that so miraculous beings come running to help. Crazed, lying in a zero circle, mute, we shall be saying finally, with tremendous eloquence, lead us. When we have totally surrendered to that beauty, we shall be a mighty kindness.
I'm a big fan of Rumi. You've heard his poetry and other sermons of mine. He never wrote anything down. A 13th century Sufi mystic, he'd wander around the, what's a Muslim mosque? He'd wander around the mosque and people would follow him and write down what he said. And at my seminary, we had a little sign in the room where a lot of the classes that took place that said, sell your certainty and buy bewilderment. Kind of an interesting thing in a place of education. So why would we do that? Why would we sell our certainty and buy bewilderment? I think it's to be open to new ways of thinking and new ways of being. Whenever I listen to Rumi or read him, I sort of let the words wash over me without trying to understand them. I think he meant for us to do that. Words or phrases from his poems call out to me and lead me somewhere that I didn't know was there. Taking advice from Rumi, I think I will practice unknowing while I'm away. I think I will not worry about whether something makes sense or not. What a privilege to be able to do that. I spend a lot of time right now making sense of things so that I can share them with you, or making decisions, making plans. And Rumi challenges me to step back from all of that. He says that if we are helpless and dumbfounded, a stretcher will come from grace to gather us up. The loveliest line in that poem for me, a stretcher will come from grace and gather us up. What a privilege to be able to take a time to not know, a time to not have to figure things out. It's truly a privilege. But again, it's not something you need 3 months of sabbatical to do. The first Sunday of the month, we have a labyrinth walk here before the service. And my instructions to people are to be in the labyrinth with soft eyes, with a soft presence, with a soft focus, and just let whatever happens, happen. Whatever experience you have, it's a moment in the 15 minutes that we walk that labyrinth of just being in a sacred space, being present, not needing to figure anything out, to make sense of anything, softening your eyes, softening your focus, and being alive. It's a different way of being present in the world, and something that I hope to have a chance to do during my sabbatical time.
Emergence is happening all around us. Small, interconnected, and seemingly disorganized occurrences and interactions are formulating to produce new ideas in culture, technology, and community. Each idea is like a seed. It must germinate in fertile soil before it musters the strength to surge towards the light of day. Emergence from the ground is not the end, but the beginning. This is where we are today, the start of a journey together.
Emergence is a good word to use at the start of a new year. Though we are in a period of darkness, the days are growing longer a little bit every day, and there is a sense of energy of new beginnings. And for me, it always feels like everything is a possibility. But I also chose the theme of emergence because of the urgency I feel of something emerging in our world. As the reading said, emergence is happening all around us despite chaos and uncertainty. New ideas, new commitment, new engagement. It's from a TED conference, Technology, Education, and Design Group, a conference on emergence. It feels like the energy of emergence in our world is like a plant that is pushing up out of the soil. I also chose the concept of emergence from a wonderful book called Emergent Strategy. Over the past few years, Roger and I, and in book groups and discussions, we've been talking a lot about white supremacy culture and how do we think differently? How do we open up our ideas and our minds to other people's ways of being in the world? And Adrienne Marie Brown is an excellent example of someone that we really need to listen to. As a biracial, bisexual, social justice organizer, she has a fresh perspective on simple things. This is just the voice that we should be listening to right now as we strive to find new ways of seeing and new ways of being. Right now, even though I'm not going to do anything for 3 months, I'm thinking of a sermon series based on this book. The idea of emergent strategy is a strategy for building complex patterns and systems of change through relatively small interactions. A strategy for building complex patterns and systems of change through relatively small interactions. One of her main principles in emergent strategy is that small is good. Small, as a matter of fact, is all. It's the idea that interpersonal and local is where we can make the most difference in our world, in our own hearts, in our families, and in our community. I've been preaching for many, many years about the ideas about how the small interactions make a difference. Some of you may remember the ministry of the greeting, the ministry of the wave. I've preached on letting people in, driving ministries of kindness that make a difference in the world. Small, small, small things that we all can do. But I'm ready to be called to something deeper. I believe that those small interactions really make a difference. If we are all interdependent, if we are all part of this great web, those small interactions really make a difference. But I'm feeling called to something deeper. I'm really wanting a new way to be in the world. I'm tired of feeling angry. I'm tired of feeling afraid and powerless. And I've been saying for quite a long time with you, in fact, probably since the fall of 2016, that we can't waste the crisis in our world right now. We can't waste the chaos. Like a little seedling, we must muster the strength to surge towards the light and the possibility. So what is that light that we must surge towards? Wonder, joy, connection, possibility, kindness, everything that's countercultural to what is going on in our world right now. We must go beyond the bounds of our current understanding and our current awareness and seek the light, the change. This is my longing. How can I help birth something new in this world? How can I be a part of what emerges? How can I help what emerges to be something positive, peaceful, and life-giving? So Adrienne Marie Brown helped me with that challenge. Helped me to realize that my desire to go deeper requires me to trust. One of the principles that she offers in emergent strategies is if you trust people, they become trustworthy. And the other one is move at the speed of trust. Now, she credits Stephen Covey, the business organizing guy, with that concept applied to marketing, applied to communication. But how about applied to our lives? Move at the speed of trust. It's really all about relationship building. There's not a lot of trust in our world right now. Sometimes it's even hard to post on Facebook because you worry that you're going to get bashed if you say something that's challenging. Not a lot of trust in our world right now. I hope you have trust in your lives. But trust in this moment in time is a radical idea, countercultural, transformational. If we're going to make it through this complex and challenging time in our world, we need to start building connections and building community. Not just here, we're really good at this. We're doing this really well. We're building a wonderful community here, a grounding community. But we need to build community out there, in spheres where we interact. And we need to do it one step at a time, moving at the speed of trust. I know I've talked a lot about our Interfaith Earth Justice Program, but they are just living the values that I find so powerful. This is our group that we work with area congregations together, our interfaith partners. We have about 6 or 7 other congregations that are participating. And they've decided in their environmental justice focus that they're focusing right here in Arden Arcade. Finding out from the people in need here, our neighbors, finding out what they need. And this is the type of relationship that we need to build right now. They're not going in with answers. They're not going in thinking they know what to do. They're going in with open hearts, trusting the people, and the people will be trustworthy. I'm really excited about, and I'm sad I won't be here for this new relationship we're building with a congregation called the New Creation Church, primarily an African-American congregation. Our Earth Justice team is building a relationship with that congregation. They're taking their time. They're getting to know people. They're finding out how we can work together to make a difference in Arden Arcade, moving at the speed of trust. The key to trust, of course, is that we have to do it together. We must walk the path together. That is how we manage the vulnerability of stepping into the uncomfortable, stepping into the unknown, holding hands, reaching out, stepping forward, moving at the speed of trust.
This is a poem by Anne Hillman. We look with uncertainty beyond the old choices for clear-cut answers to a softer, more permeable aliveness, which is every moment at the brink of death. For something new is being born in us if we but let it. We stand at a new doorway, awaiting that which comes, daring to be human creatures, vulnerable to the beauty of existence, learning to love.
This is my New Year's blessing for you, that you can look beyond the old choices for clear-cut answers to a more permeable aliveness, that you can keep your heart and eyes and spirit open to the possibility of what we can do together, that you could participate in the emergence of something new in our world, something good and wholesome and nurturing, that you can move at the speed of trust. I will miss you. In the midst of my stillness and bewilderment and hibernation, I will always keep you close to my heart. Please know that. And when I return in April, I will be excited to see what has emerged from this community and to share what has emerged from me in my time away. Blessed be.